I am Roy Malloy, and you are listening to The Dawn of Crime, a podcast dedicated to criminal research, biography, and Australian history in all of its shifty, shady glory. I'm going to be joined today by a repeat guest, a gentleman who did sufficiently well in a previous podcast, a gentleman I've known for a long time, a drag queen, a comedian, a cabaret superstar, and an all-round fantastic guy. Welcome, Mr. Jack London.
Hello, Roy. Thank you so much for having me again.
It's a thrill to have you back. How did you enjoy our last show since you reflected on it?
It was good. It's been so long. It was good hearing the story about it. And because I've only really heard more of just about Squeezy. It's good to hear the sort of little side stories that go with it as well. It's always quite fascinating.
Interesting segue. Squeezy Taylor was born in 1888. What else happened that year in Melbourne?
Oh, I know what happened in London in that year.
Go on, tell me.
Jack the Ripper.
Very good. August of 1888 was Jack the Ripper. What was happening in Melbourne simultaneously?
Oh, gosh. I can't think of anything major off the top of my head.
It was the centenary of Australia, 100 years since invasion.
God, I should have known that.
It was also the year when Australia, to celebrate, had a, it's hard to describe what grand exhibitions were. But the grand exhibition was at the the Carlton Gardens, which was the Melbourne Exhibition Centre for a long time. And it's directly north of Melbourne, and it kind of separates out Melbourne from Fitzroy, which is the first suburb of Melbourne. And it was an exhibition where people could go and they could see everything from farming machinery to international displays of other countries. I think the Crystal Palace in London is probably the instigator of these kinds of things.
Yes.
But it was an incredible, incredible thing. And everybody who was anybody went to see this thing, right? Now, in 1888, do you believe there were drag queens?
Yes.
It's a strange thing to believe, but it was a time and a period where it just had never really been done before. It was starting to be done, but there was no real precedence of anybody deliberately in the public. I think like Dame Edna is probably a good example, whereas a man who wanted you to believe, even though you knew that by birth, their gender by birth was of a male constitution. Am I saying that correctly? I'm trying to be sensitive of phraseology here, but nobody had ever represented the opposite of their gender birth in clothing before.
I know definitely there were what you would call nowadays drag queens back then. Definitely not the way you would see it now. They weren't openly performing in bars and openly sort of advertising it. We've definitely come leaps and bounds since then. It was more of sophisticated kind of taboo.
And so we have a situation in 1867, where a circus proprietor from the US with two partners comes to Melbourne. One of the partners was a young boy slash kind of orphan. Think borderline kidnap from very poor family. But this little boy was very elfin, very small. And the circus proprietor raised this boy with his own daughters dressed as a girl because there was a genuine belief that boys could do things girls couldn't. And the one thing that was driving the world absolutely crazy was circuses with horses. And the one trick that was just the crowd favorite was a man that would ride like a surfboard on the back of a running horse and throw a backflip. But there was a total belief that no woman, it just was not possible. There was no belief or understanding that it could. It's like saying she could fly to the moon, right?
Yeah.
So he raised this little boy to dress as a girl, behave like a girl, respond as a girl, so he would never be found out. He brought the little girl to Melbourne, and her name was Ella Zoyara. His real name was Omar Kingsley. He identified as male, but it was a complete hoax. So that had come in the 1860s. Skip forward again to 1888. We've got a situation where the Grand Exhibition is in Melbourne. People are thronging through its corridors. But all of a sudden, all the attention goes to one of the halls. And there's a young man, and he's walking side by side, completely uninterrupted, with a lady, and they're arm in arm. And he's a man, and she's a woman, but he's dressed as a woman.
Ah.
How do you believe the other people around when they, and it wasn't instant, they didn't instantly say that geezer's wearing a mop on his head like the minstrels. He'd really done a good job of, and he was beautifully faced. And I'll put a photo up on my Facebook page of him. But he's beautifully faced. What do you believe the people at the exhibition do when they see Gordon?
Now, it's interesting because as I mentioned before, it was a sophisticated kind of taboo. Obviously, back then, Australia was still very British. Even though it was, 100 years since it's been there, they still had their very strong British upper class, sort of upper lip about them. I think there would have been a lot of women clutching at their high laced necks. Would have been lots of gasping and, oh, well, now really? But
would
there would have been
away or to him.
I definitely would have run towards, I believe.
They did. They ran in such numbers to see him as though you had just shown a teenager a smartphone for the first time ever.
Yes.
Ran directly at him, so much so that it kind of pressed him and his female companion barricaded them up against a wall. And it was starting to create a crush. You know, the kind you get at a concert where people break
rib? Oh, yeah.
So we're thinking 300 people now are pressed up against to see this. And the word's getting back. And this one lonely copper called Detective Sexton, which I love the irony, both Perfect. Because of the first part of that name and also a sexton is a navigational tool.
I thought that was a sextant.
I'm going to go, yeah, all right, let's not get... Look, we could talk about who's right and who's wrong for hours. Let's just put this madness behind us. So Detective Sexton sees Gordon Lawrence and he ushers him into an office. 48 hours later, where do you believe Gordon is?
Now, Gordon is the one that's dressed, the biological man that's
Lawrence
dressed
as... has only gone somewhere dressed as a woman.
He's obviously in prison. He's in a cell somewhere.
2 days later, he's still in prison.
Yeah.
Now, he wasn't there for his own safety. Gordon Lawrence had made a mistake because there was a number of crimes that we no longer have. They're crimes that you can't be prosecuted for. And one of them, which was a very useful crime for police, if you get a guy and he's swearing at people in the street and you know he's about to hit someone or harm someone, but he's doing those behaviors that kind of come before. One of the handy crimes of the past was offensive behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But it literally means that if anybody is offended by your behavior, you can be arrested. Now, it's not
sometimes
I do too. I do too. But I know it also be its victim on a lot of occasions.
Same here.
And so then you get a situation where the police grab this guy and you'd think that the fine for offensive behavior, what would that be? I mean, let's say when was the last time you were at a shopping center and you were offended?
During a pandemic? All the time. I don't know. I get offended about the stupidest things, but I use the word offended and just mildly annoyed, even if someone's walking on the wrong side of the footpath.
Now that could count.
Yeah. Now, knowing what I know from back then as well, any sort of this kind of behavior could also land them in an asylum.
Very, very true. Now, when you and I met Mr. London, I believe you were wearing a dress that was made from a curtain, fabulously tailored at that. High heels that I would kill to have the calves to wear, lipstick and a full contingent of makeup, stunningly beautiful in every way. if I was offended by seeing you dressed as such, and if that law existed, what should the fine be? Or what should the, if we lived in a country where everybody voted that was a law we all wanted, the majority, what should the punishment, what would a standard punishment be, do you think?
Well, I imagine it would be something along the lines of removing the problem. So I wonder if he may have been stripped and put in a cell.
Quite the
but then also...
He was left in his
car
so that when he appeared in front of the judge and a courtroom full of spectators, he was still wearing all the clothes and makeup, but now looking pretty decidedly Monday morning as of Friday night.
Right, yes.
So there's a humiliation process in this.
Look, I've slept in full hair and makeup before, and the next morning it has not been pretty, so I can only imagine what he would have looked like.
So he walked into court and there were murmurs of disgust and astonishment in the newspapers, we are quoted. The police revealed that Gordon was not an actor, but he was, in fact, an assistant to a doctor in Brunswick.
Oh.
So the question, first of all, became, well, that would be okay if he's an actor. And there was a kind of an aspersion there, wasn't there, to being one of those theatricals. But he's in court, and it turns out that he is a assistant to a doctor in Brunswick, and he's had no prior convictions. He more or less said, look, I'm an aspiring actor. I want to just kind of get into the role of being a woman. I just did it for a bit of a gag. What do you believe the punishment in court was in 1888?
Oh, God, it's hard to say. I really can't think of what it would be. There's all these different ideas, but...
6 months in prison with hard labor, which literally meant you were given a hammer, put in front of a great rock, and your job was to break it apart and make gravel for the newly laid train lines. He was given 6 months in Pentridge, and he was released on the 9th of March. This has been the story of Gordon Lawrence. And I for one, Mr. London, can say I'm thankful to live in this era of, well, there are still countries that would actually behave like this now I think about it. In fact, I believe if he had his way, Mr. Trump would behave this way.
God, yeah.
Mr. Jack London, thank you so much for joining us today on The Dawn of Crime. You have been listening to one of the excerpts from the book, The Queerest of Crimes, which is part of the Dawn of Crime book series. And you can find them on the internet simply by searching The Dawn of Crime by Roy Malloy, and that's M-A-L-O-Y. The Queerest of Crimes is a whole book solely dedicated to biographies similar to what you've just been listening to. And they are stories of people who were prosecuted purely because they chose their right to represent their gender the way they chose and felt they wanted to. My name has been Roy Malloy. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Jack London.
Thank you very much.